Good morning. My name is Mark Hauser. I'm 100% Jewish by blood. These are my daughters, 50% by blood. You'll see why I use that as we move through the morning. I'm Jewish by birth, was bar mitzvahed, and became a UU by choice in 2001 when my wife Jennifer and I joined this fellowship. Jen is living in a town in Oregon with 8 people right now, and eventually I'm going to get out there, but that's a whole nother story. I work at an all-sports radio station in Spartanburg. I co-host an afternoon sports talk show as part of my duties, and back when, I often liked to mix a little political talk in, a little political discourse in when dissecting the sports news of the day, because there are times that politics are relevant to sports. Example, back when the first Super Bowl was played, and happy Super Sunday, secular holiday, hope you enjoy the game. Back when the Super Bowl started in the early 60s, mid-60s, the face value of a ticket was $6. Face value of the ticket now, you can't even get face value anymore. It's $4,000 on the secondary market for one ticket for the game today. A couple of years ago, a guest host and I became embroiled in a discussion about the NCAA threatening to take action against the state of Indiana for their new religious freedom law. George Orwell, line one. When boiled down, the law allowed businesses in Indiana to not serve people because they might, business owners might have been uncomfortable with their sexual orientation. I praised the NCAA for pressuring the Indiana governor to rescind the law. Quick historical footnote, the governor of Indiana at the time is a gentleman named Mike Pence. Proper reaction. As a result of my on-air position, a few of our sponsors threatened to pull their advertising from the show. So a new rule, understandably, was instituted at my place of work, no more politics mixed with our sports. And I got it, and I still get it. I get it. We have a one-horse radio station. We are not owned by Clear Channel or iHeart or Cox or any of the big corporations. We're a one-horse operation, which is very rare in today's media landscape. We're doing fine, but the loss of several sponsors could take us quickly from making a living to not making a living. So we all have families to feed, and we decided that would be the way we go. We no longer talk about politics and sports. And this has become not just a trend locally, it's become a trend nationally in my industry. I hear more and more national hosts going on shows bragging about how their ratings remain high because they purposely avoid politics. But I think there's a lesson to be learned here. There's a caveat to all this. I have heard hosts at all levels, again, local, regional, and national, sidestep this because no politics can be sidestepped if it sells. So I wrote this about an industry I have worked in for better than 3 decades, and I'm personally uncomfortable with the changes I'm seeing. No politics was the decree across the landscape of sports talk radio. Bad for business. Okay, all right, fine. Then please, I ask you to stop bringing up politics. Quit making it okay to fawn over that awesome Military Appreciation Day ceremony at Clemson or USC, but not have a discussion about the obvious precarious love affair between nationalism and militarism. Quit making it okay to say that a local football coach is simply getting fair market value when he pulls in $6 million a year, but not have a discussion concerning labor practices and the near 0% of total earnings that are paid to his laborers, otherwise known as college football players. Quit making it okay to talk about using taxpayer funds to build a beautiful stadium that should help boost attendance and profits, leading to a higher player payroll, making the team more competitive, but not have a discussion about municipal tax policy and how bond ratings in certain cities have been trashed due to deals to accommodate professional sports franchises, while at the same time depriving community schools and other public services of needed funding. And let's just avoid talking about the weather altogether, even though it affects games that are and should be played outdoors, even though rising temperatures are already changing scheduling practices and they're driving the push for more indoor facilities with huge carbon footprints to be built with taxpayer money. The bottom line is, if we're not talking about nationalism, tax policy, militarism, labor rights, climate change, then we're kind of doing an intellectually vagrant exercise. So I'll stop bringing up politics, but you have to as well. And perhaps more to the point, I am asking you to have the wherewithal to be aware that what you think isn't political is. Quick example. A couple of weeks back, a promoter named Vince McMahon. Have you heard of Vince McMahon, worldwide wrestling guy? Vince McMahon, all right. Anna Lucas, there you go. WWE, right? Vince McMahon, who, by the way, footnote, his wife Linda ran for Connecticut U.S. Senate, ran for the U.S. Senate seat in Connecticut. She got crushed, but she ran. She should have ran in the South. She probably would have won. But anyway, he's bringing back his old professional football league, the XFL, to begin play in a couple of years. In his introductory press conference, well aware of the NFL controversy surrounding Colin Kaepernick and players kneeling for the anthem, and then looking to cash in on the associated backlash, McMahon said that his new league would, now follow me, would avoid politics altogether by requiring all players to stand for the anthem. Thanks for making my point, Vince. By the way, footnote on that, I don't know, Shane McMahon, Vince's son, when I was a day camp counselor in Connecticut as a kid, I once threw him in a lake. I was a junior counselor. He was a holy terror. That was before he got all roided up. Okay. I could do a whole sermon on sports today, but I want to go back to the most troubling part of everything I just referenced. The fact that our sponsors threatened to pull their support of my show, and we as a station, due to understandable economic reasons, acquiesced. That basically has become a tacit backing of the status quo, again, regionally, nationally, locally. National networks are doing the same. Their fear of mixing politics in with sports is that they will lose ratings and in turn advertisers and in turn revenue. We of an industry have learned what the NFL and college football already know. And when you watch the Super Bowl today, if you watch the half hour leading up to the game, watch how many commercials and NFL sponsored things are going to tie in the military and there's nothing wrong with veterans. I'm not taking a shot at the military. Just watch how they weave patriotism and nationalism into everything having to do with this football game. They have learned that militarism, nationalism, and patriotism sell. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about whistles. In any sport other than baseball, we can't play a game without the officials blowing whistles. So I want to talk about whistles. Because in a climate where our public discourse can be shut down so easily by the rhetoric of dog whistle politics, we need to be asking ourselves, are we in this country living in a time where dog whistles, and this is where it gets heavy, where dog whistles can morph into train whistles, trains with boxcars? How close are we? There's currently a French comedian who doubles as a politician who uses a train whistle during his comedy act when speaking about French Jews. Last night in Fort Collins, a group of counter-protesters brandishing shields and wearing helmets chanted Nazi slogans while attacking a group protesting a right-wing speaker at Colorado State University. Should our antenna be honed in at a higher sensitivity level than normal? Are there parallels to what we are seeing now in our nation and what we have seen historically in countries that have fallen prey to demagogues and dictatorial regimes? To use a sports phrase, how different or the same is the current playbook being used as compared to playbooks that have been used in the past? And best of all, or most importantly, what can, or better put, what should we do about it? And with that, I'd like to bring up somebody who has studied these subjects. Lucy Beam Hoffman is a member here. She has a master's in history with a concentration on Holocaust studies. And I'm going to ask her some questions. Morning.
Good morning. Now I see why they listen to you.
Yeah. Let's start with this. Our current economy here in the States is doing well. Germany's was in a shambles. Why do you think we are seeing some of these parallels now that some are saying exist between what we have now and what they had then in terms of rising authoritarianism?
I think we definitely have a group of people larger than clearly I expected that feel very disadvantaged, that feel like the economy is not growing for them. I think, as he famously said, the mass uneducated are feeling the effects that their income is not increasing. In fact, it's decreasing. And I think he's feeding into that fear, as countries always do when you need a scapegoat, by saying that the Hispanics are taking their jobs. You know, as far as I know, I don't know too many white people who want to put ceiling tiles on, or roof tiles on, or pavement on the highways, or build houses.
So when you talk about people who feel like they've been left behind, we talked about this before the service, with the rising wealth inequity that we see, not just in America, but in a number of countries around the world, you say that creates a vacuum.
Historically speaking, you can read it, you can study it. The further apart the rich and the poor get, the closer you are to revolution. And every revolution needs a leader. And we've got one that's priming himself, and he's pushing it. He's making the tax advantages for the rich, and he's creating more disparity.
So with that, if we are paralleling some things in the 1920s and 30s in Germany, where are we not paralleling? What things do we have going
for us? We're not paralleling that right now economically. We also didn't lose a major war and get blamed for it. The two things that got Hitler elected were the economy. Germany was doing really well up until about 1929, literally when the stock market crashed, mm-hmm. because we were giving them the money to pay France. And then when the stock market crashed, we had no money. So immediately, they're without jobs. And the other thing that Hitler was saying is, I will make Germany great again. I mean, you can read it in his speeches. He also promoted the jobs. If I put you back in the military, we get the industry going, you have jobs again. And we will make Germany great again, because Germany took the responsibility. Article 241 in the Paris Peace Treaty, it was all Germany's fault for World War I.
When you talk about the fact that Hitler was able to consolidate power, when we talk about that, he got about 30-some-odd percent of the vote in a multi-party system.
That's after he was already appointed.
Already appointed. So, but he was appointed chancellor.
Correct.
Why would German leadership, if they recognized the dangers in what he wrote in Mein Kampf and what he spoke about publicly in all of his speeches, why would they put him in that position? Why would they make him chancellor?
Interestingly, there were 8 men that were being considered, and he was considered the one most controllable.
Controllable.
Yeah. I think what he wrote in Mein Kampf, throughout European history, there's anti-Semitism.
Sure.
Throughout, there are threads of anti-Semitism. In France, there's you have the Alfred Dreyfus affair in the early 1900s. You also have the stab in the back theory, in which The generals of the German army and Hitler blamed the people at home for the reason they lost World War I. It was called the stab in the back theory, and he mostly blamed the people at home, which were the Jews. So he, when he comes to power, he's seen as a man who can make Germany great again.
Mm-hmm.
But they think they can control him. And the first thing that he does is he tries to take over the arts. Well, he doesn't try. He takes over the arts, and he takes over the media.
The arts.
The arts.
What's the significance of the arts?
I think the significance is, I was going to say something funny, but he didn't get into art school. But that's not the reason.
Yeah, he was a lousy
person. God, I wish he had. if you control arts, you control culture. Mm-hmm. If I can control the picture that I put on the wall, or the songs that we sing, or the books that you read, you control how people think. He was extremely brilliant with that.
So here in this country, we've got an administration that wants to defund the National Endowment for the Arts. Is that a red flag?
That's a big red flag. He wants to, what has he done to the media? They're mm-hmm. all liars, right?
Right.
Big, second big red flag. He's marching with red flags.
Okay. So, did Hitler have enablers? Because you could make the case that our current leadership is getting a free pass on some of the things he does based on other people in power. Did Hitler have people enabling him?
Initially, he had people surrounding him. When we had the beer hall putsch, he had supporters. Goebbels was there. And he goes to prison, and that's when he writes Mein Kampf, in which he mentions the airplane pilot who flew around the world.
Charles Lindbergh.
Lindbergh. Talks about what a great guy he is. But when he gets out, he does have a group of people that support him, and he immediately begins. 1933, he has a couple of times that he's killing people. 1934, kind of backs off. But his original support group are the brown shirts, who he slaughtered in one night, claimed they were all gay, and slaughtered them. And these were close friends of his. Then after that, he had the control of the government. So his enablers, if you didn't enable him, he killed you. Trump can't yet do that, but he definitely has enablers.
So you talked about LGBTs in Germany. We always talk about what happened to the Jews in Germany. We understand the Gypsies, the Romas also suffered. But you mentioned to me the LGBT community might have gotten it, hard to say this, but might have gotten it worse than anybody.
The things that he did to gays while they were alive is just unimaginable, reprehensible. He did horrible things, of course, to the Jews, but, I mean, the gays, did the kids go out? Yeah. He would hang them up by their hands and take broomsticks and insert into their anal cavities.
Yeah.
And worse.
And I know this is pretty dark, but if we were to turn this on its head, while we do seem to have parallels in this country, are there things about America right now that make you say, okay, I've got some hope. This isn't the road we're
headed.
Well,
as I say in the program, we can have this and not get shot while we're in here. We don't have to worry about going outside and getting shot. Apparently, you can have this conversation and not lose your job.
Right. We'll find out Monday.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
We're all going to come picket the station if that happens.
Okay, good. Thank you.
We can still share information. I mean, what I see as hopeful was the march. I was in Washington in January of last year. The march this year. I think in some ways his authoritarianism is galvanizing many that would never be politically involved. I'm considering running for office.
Right.
I think there's no possibility I can win, but I don't. But I think what I can do and what others can do is pave the way for the next young woman. Not that I'm the young woman. Pave the way for a young woman to run and to see it can be done.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing all over the country, you're seeing women step up. You're seeing the Me Too movement. This is because of 45.
Mm-hmm.
We're outing the people, the men that think power allows them to do anything they want. I think that's extremely hopeful.
Do you think, in order for me to have hope, I need to have confidence in our country's systems of checks and balances? Now, this isn't so much an academic question for you, it's more having you peer into the future based on what you've studied. Do you think our balances and checks in this country can hold up?
At this point, I do. I think we still have the First Amendment, no matter what the idiots who say you can't take a knee.
Mm-hmm.
We still have the First Amendment. We can still write. Facebook is powerful, even if you don't read it anymore. I, too, get in a lot of fights. You should read mine. We have social media that allows us to be very clear about what we believe. We have more people calling our senators. Who's called a senator? Or, look at this. I know, we're speaking to the choir. But still, that just didn't happen. Who's gone to Washington to march since the 60s? I have. First march ever. You went to Washington? Okay. Since the 60s, okay.
I can tell you personally, since this has all happened, I've joined the ACLU. I've started giving money to Amnesty International. And I have called both of our senators. I haven't bothered calling our Congress guy, because he's our Congress guy, but he's actually given me hope lately because he's suddenly jumping up and down and screaming about the memo.
I mean, we've got Tim Gowdy leaving Congress. Yay.
Yeah.
There are some.
Yeah.
They're definitely.
But you're right. There's been a polarizing factor for
the both polarization sides. Is a huge concern.
Yeah.
There is, heard on the way here, timing is everything, that during World War II, when we had the interventionists and we had the isolationists, the isolationist name was America First. So Trump very wisely looked into history and used a phrase that we have used in America before. And it's a very isolationist. I mean, do we want to be an, can you be an isolationist country in 2018? It's nice if we take care of our own, but can you not be involved? I don't see that that's possible.
Couple more things. DACA kids, El Salvadorians being sent back, the talk about Haitians will lose their status and be sent back to Haiti in a country that still is totally devastated 8 years later or 6 years later from that earthquake. The fact that they're arresting people and taking them from their homes, from their families, not in the middle of the night, but almost without a door knock. What is that?
That's
how does
terrifying.
That play in?
That is terrifying. Anybody in here a great direct descendant of American Native American Indians? Anybody here a direct descendant of Native American Indians? Okay, I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You get to stay. The rest of us have to go back because we are a nation of immigrants. We are a country that has always opened our doors. We have the Statue of Liberty to prove it, for God's sake. Really? We are a country of immigrants, and we are a great country because of that. And that is terrifying. You can take somebody's husband who built a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
fed, and paid numbers of Americans.
Has a PhD.
And take him and send him back to Mexico. You're going to take the Dreamers who never lived there and send them to a country where they have no family. This is not America. This is not how we were built. This is not what we do. Please, please vote. Please run for office, even if you don't think you can win. Just get out there and get your voice heard. Call your senators, call your congressmen. There are things you can do. And your voice does count. There are places that elections have been won by one vote or lost by one vote.
Finally, as you use, and you and I discussed this earlier, as you use, we have an obligation to listen to people of all stripes. And you put it way better than I did, because I'm not as nice as you are.
Oh, I think you are. I think you're nicer. I had a tendency to think I'm a lot smarter than some of the Baptists around me, or smarter than the Methodists, or smarter than the, you name it. And the only person I can change is me. And the only way I can do that is really by listening. So I have to be careful. And one thing I've done, if any of you follow me on Facebook, I can get quite ugly. I'm making a point not to do that. If we can listen, even as hard as it would be to the person that says Trump is great.
She said through clenched teeth.
Yeah, even if you can listen, ask them why. Because if we continue to get more and more polarized, we are definitely headed for trouble, big trouble. From a historical standpoint, this is not my guess, this is studying history. When the person that you least agree with says something really stupid, don't say that. Say, why do you believe that? Let's talk about it. And maybe if we can begin to find a kernel of common awareness or common understanding, then we can begin to close that huge gap that we have.
Thanks.
Thank you for asking me.
And thanks to all of you.